Mocktails. I'm meteorologist Chris Rosh on 1490 WGCH and WGCH.com anywhere.
The following show has paid WGCH a broadcasting fee, and the opinions expressed during the show are not necessarily those of the staff, management, or ownership of WGCH Radio.
What is America to me? A house I live in, a plot of earth, a street, the grocer and the butcher, and the people that I meet, the children in the playground, the faces that I see, all races and religions. That's America to me.
All right, we're going to cut right into the great and fabulous Frank Sinatra song, whatever it was called. What's the title again, Bob? I always forget. My House, Your House, The House I Live In. America to Me? Is that it? I thought it was The House I Live In. Yes, Bob Small, in case people wanted to know, does your board operator, station manager, Bob Small, have a sense of humor? Apparently, yes. I told him I was running a little late, and so what does he do? He runs the... He's dug up the...
Well, I felt it was an equivalently American flag-waving kind of song as your
theme song for the National Guard.
Yeah.
Now, most people will say, I didn't know there was one. And by the way, this show is second to none in its appreciation of the National Guard and the services that it provides. However, I think we could dispense with their little anthem. And that goes for the... Do you find the Coast Guard one? It's a nice, catchy little tune.
I have it, but I didn't put it in with my other ones. It's okay. I have a bunch of them because we have this show, you know, on called Brave Americans, one of Tony B's.
Oh, there we are. Yeah, are the National Guard. Seems like they're stretching that one a little bit, squeeze those words into. Well, I don't know. Maybe not. But yes, Tony B's show is what's it called again? Brave Americans.
Yes.
Yeah, and very good. Good. Yeah. Tony B, one of our. Very skilled and talented voices here at WGCH.
Prolific.
Exactly. A man can spin out unlimited numbers of shows. So this show is called Your Greenwich House. The speaker is Gideon Fountain, of course, popular Greenwich realtor. Oh, sorry. No, the FCC made me correct that. I can't actually demonstrate that I'm popular, but I am well known. That we demonstrated. So well-known Greenwich realtor. And, of course, the lack of inventory is the usual story every week now. We had an office meeting at Houlihan Lawrence yesterday, and we discussed that there are 81 listings for sale in Greenwich. And, by the way, I'll bet you fully a quarter of those, maybe more, have deals on that just aren't being reported, you know, because the deal is just beginning or something like that. So there's so few houses for sale. It's extremely irritating to everybody. But as I say, and buyers being the least, being the most irritated, although I suppose real estate agents are too. I mean, there's a lot of people who thought, well, I'll make a living selling real estate. And you can't make a living selling. I mean, all of us have been doing it for years. There's enough business for us. But if you're a newbie, no matter how good you are, it's very tough right now. If you don't have anything to sell, a lot of the younger brokers have lots of buyers and not so many listings, because that's how it works. And the buyers are frustrated, and you go something like Debbie Needle. Debbie Needle brought something out. Debbie's one of the top brokers. She's always selling something. I mean, seriously, she always has a deal cooking. It's absolutely incredible. Debbie Needle at Houlihan Lawrence. So she brings on a condo for $5 million and change right next door to Town Hall. They were built by...
those condos.
The late, great Greg Silver, who thought at the time, he told me, oh, I underpriced them because he only got, you know, in the $3 million for them. Yes. Yes, those condos. They're called The Modern, which, a name I don't like. But
that does definitely describe how they look.
I know. They're not... Yeah, I mean, they're almost kind of... My initial reaction was yuck, and I really was highly critical of architect Rich Granoff, thinking that he had built these sort of factory-looking buildings, but somehow, I don't know, I've gotten
a lot of glass.
Gotten used to it, yeah. No, the views are great from the inside, and they're not even so bad from the outside at this point. I don't know, maybe I've just gotten used to it. Maybe my taste is declining. No, but I think maybe I was a little overly harsh on old Rich Granoff, because he does good stuff. Nobody likes the house he built for himself, I'll point out, on the water, but there you are. He's built some attractive buildings. For instance, I'll give you an example. The Greenwich Library has a classic, now iconic, because it's such a landmark in town, limestone exterior. And he, Rich Granoff, I guess, was hired by Chase Bank to build a branch right next door.
Oh, yes.
The site of a former gas station. So he does build it. And sure enough, he references visually the library building next door to it. Mm. They're separated by Deer Park or Deerfield Drive. And it's a very good job. It's amazing. I saw it one night in kind of dusk. It was dusk. It was not quite dark. Sky still had some light in it. Yes, Kenny, we understand what... All right, just making sure. And the interior lights of the building were on, and it was actually beautiful. So that's a Rich Granoff building, if you want to know what he's capable of. It's that one next to the library, Greenwich Library, and it's the Chase, one of the Chase Banks.
Very unusual glass front.
Yeah, greenish glass, yeah. And the limestone. It's limestone.
It's sitting outside of a framework, really. That glass.
Yeah, that's right. Yep. Yeah, pretty cool. Mm. If we had an address, we could have people send people to Google Maps to take a look.
Well, anyway, pretty good there. Across from the library, Deerfield Drive.
Yeah. Deerfield Drive. I wonder if it's the address. Might even be. Now, it's probably got a West Putnam Avenue address, don't you think? Let's see. Hold on. Let's look it up.
That's a good point.
Yeah, they don't want Deerfield to be confused. Just say West Putnam. We call the Post Road Route 1, we call it West Putnam Avenue and East Putnam Avenue for mysterious reasons.
The dividing line is Greenwich Avenue.
Yes, it is. Although it's also somewhere in Coscob, too, where the numbers start again, the East.
Oh, I didn't know that.
East Putnam starts again.
Yeah, it's for goodness sake.
Really confusing. Ugh. I blame Coscob. Let me see. A lot of dead air get in. Yeah, I know about the dead air. Thank you. Even when I'm talking, it's dead air. So, I wonder if I should play this Paul McCartney whistling a tune that he just came into his head. Well, we'll think about it during the break.
We'll do that.
Yeah,
we?
But you should hear this one. I'll play you this one during the break.
Oh, okay.
And we'll see if we come back with it. All right, so the answer is, survey says that, Chase Bank, West Putnam Avenue, Greenwich, Connecticut. Now it's going to say, do you want to chase a bank? No. Oh, here it is. Nope, didn't figure it out. Secaucus, New Jersey. Yeah, thanks. Jeez. Unbelievable. Didn't I not?
Did you have your location turned off?
I spoke clearly.
For goodness sake.
500. Oh, it's not 500 West. We know that. 111 West Putnam Avenue. Thank you. Check out the building at 111 West Putnam Avenue. See if it, I mean, who knows? Maybe the picture will look. You'll say, what the hell are you talking about? But it's actually good looking. So anyway, Debbie brings on a Rich Granoff designed and built, or built by Greg Silver. It's called 125 Field Point Road, next door to the high school. And it's one of the penthouse units. There's four of them.
You mean next door to the town hall?
what is used to be the high school is
okay,
now
okay.
Town Hall.
Okay, all right, all right.
Yeah, and you're right. That does get confusing. So she brings it on for $5.5 million on, I don't know, I think it was, what's today? I think it was Monday morning. And today is Wednesday. So I call her, or I text Debbie and say, hey, can I sneak in on a showing? My buyer for this is out of town, but I'd like to just sneak in. This is around 4 o'clock, right? It's been on for, 5 or 6 hours. And she texts back and says, sorry, but we have multiple offers. So she was able to just stop showings at that point. $5.5 million has been on for several hours. Now, in the old days, you had time. You know, our customers, we'd send it out to somebody. They were in Manhattan, and they say, yeah, sure, we'll come out Saturday or Sunday and take a look. Now you say, no, get in your car now while I'm in the middle of it. I don't care. You said you wanted a condo in downtown Greenwich. You're not going to get another chance for 3 or 4 weeks, maybe 3 or 4 months, maybe not this year. Get out here now. It's tremendous pressure. I mean, man, oh, man, $5.5 million. And by the way, they only paid about $3,750 a few years ago for this place. Now, yes, it's one of the penthouse units, so it's got a whole up, you control one half of the roof of the building. It's really nicely done up there. It's got a little kitchen and terraces and shrubs and, really amazing. It's amazing. And it's downtown Greenwich. You walk to the train station.
And that it does have an amazing view because it's up on the top of a ridge.
Yes, basically. Absolutely. Yeah. Just as Greenwich High School back with what is now the Town Hall building, it was one of the cooler things. I didn't go to that. I didn't get to go, but it turns out the top floor of the high school had beautiful water views of Long Island Sound. Wow. Imagine that. And still does, but now it's just to Greenwich bureaucrats. But never mind. $5.5 million gone in a couple of hours with multiple offers. How do you like that? Debbie Needle of Houlihan Lawrence. I don't know the name. I don't have a name yet for whoever the lucky or the busy.
Nor do you have the actual sale price yet.
No, definitely not. Mm. And it might have gone over.
Yes.
Absolutely amazing. $5.5 million gone in several hours. And that's been the story on a lot of these. I think, for instance, Ellen Mosier, also of Houlihan, brought 7 Jones Park Drive, Riverside, on the market. 7 Jones Park Drive, Riverside. Very nice street. A lot of space between the houses. And that's a nice kind of a luxury. Gives a luxurious feeling. $5.995 million. I thought this house, designed by an architect named... some architect I've never heard of, but he's done another one on that street. Let's see what Ellen, she answered the question for me. The architect is, some of these architects, here it is. The guy's name is Anthony Butler and Associates. Anthony Butler and Associates. Builder was Richard Hammernick of Darien. And this is a very, very nice house. It was the Harmons lived there when I was a kid. I think they were on my paper route. I don't know if they still owe me money or not. I can't remember.
Have you heard about the book that got returned to the Greenwich Library?
No. How many years?
56 years.
Okay,
overdue.
So that's 8,000. Wait, I can do the math. 8,100.
Well, you don't need to do the math because no library charges overdue fees anymore.
Oh, they don't. Right. Yeah,
of course. It's a whole new approach to how.
Oh, wonderful. Yeah. Great. Yeah, so no penalties. Yeah, that's great. Yeah. Typical of the easing of law enforcement.
Well.
I like the old days when Charlie Brown lost his library book. He had dreams. He was haunted by dreams. This is a Peanuts cartoon.
Yes.
By dreams of the library police coming and taking him away. And finally...
library police.
That's what he said. And then he comes running out. It might have been Linus, but I think it was Charlie Brown. Yeah, maybe it was Linus who lost his book.
Uh-huh. He seems to have that kind of personality.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, yeah, and a real worrier.
Yeah, yeah.
And such a biblical scholar, too. My goodness. Good old Linus. Those Peanuts cartoons were so formative for me.
Yeah.
You can see how I ended up the way I did. Anyway, Linus comes running out of the house one day, screaming and yelling to his friends, I found the book! I found the book! I can't believe it! He said, I looked in the refrigerator, and there it was! Yeah, that. No wonder you didn't find it for a while, you knucklehead. Leaves a book in the refrigerator.
I mean, what a trick to write a comic that basically adults and children can enjoy. That's
I know. Well, that was amazing. Charles Schulz. Absolutely amazing. And do not, whatever you do, do not read the definitive biography of Charles Schulz. I made the mistake. It's way, way, way more information than you would ever want to know. Uh-huh. And it actually spoils your image of the guy. So just don't read it. avoid it. In fact, it just don't read anything about Charles Schulz. It's not like it's nothing shameful. It's just kind of tawdry,
unnecessary detail.
Yeah, exactly.
None of us would look good under that kind of a microscope.
Correct, Bob Small. I agree. Although, well, maybe I would. But now, listen, my sister.
You think so, huh?
Los Angeles, no. My Los Angeles listener says she can't hear the show. Damn it! What's going on here?
I agree.
I wonder what that means.
I can get up and go look at something.
You can?
Yeah.
Yeah, go take a look.
All right.
And meanwhile, I will. I don't have to vamp. This is my show. I can talk about anything I want. So as I drive to the studio today, and I often do this, I'm driving along Route 95. That puts me right alongside the railroad tracks of Metro North train tracks, formerly the New York-New Haven Railroad. And they were helped into bankruptcy by the federal government building a highway right next to, right alongside the train tracks, which took a tremendous amount of the freight business away from the trains. So if you ever wonder why the train companies went, some of them went out of business, it was because of, helped along by the federal government and its idiotic plans to build roads. I mean, I don't consider it idiotic that it freed up transportation. How are we doing with that, Bob Small?
Seems to be working.
All right, I will send my sister a caustic text message at the break time.
Oh, dear.
So, I'm driving along and I see the Acela train go by.
Oh, yes.
The Acela is our high-speed rail line. And it was whizzing by, and I'm not exaggerating, at least 40, possibly 45 miles an hour.
Dear.
I mean, this thing was going with the wind, our high-speed rail line, 40-plus miles an hour. I mean, there are horses that can run a little bit faster than that, but that's fine. Okay, but what is it with the Acela? They used to say, oh, well, you know, the train can go that fast, but the railroad beds are antiquated, and we can't travel at that speed. So we invest billions, with a B, billions of dollars is sent from Washington out to the blue states mostly, you know, the Northeast, for track upgrades.
But the Acela only runs along the east coast of this country, if I'm not mistaken.
So it doesn't. You can't take it out to the west coast.
So far, they haven't decided to do that.
Oh, that's so crazy!
Isn't that ridiculous?
Yeah, it's just.
Yesterday, I got stopped by work being done on the overpass in Cass Cobb, the one they have to run under the train tracks to get from one side of the town to the other. If you're taking that back route, anyway. They had about 20 guys up on the track putting clips on the rails.
Yes.
I know this because at a certain point, the fellow that had stopped me, I beeped the horn, asked him to come over. I says, well, how long, how much more minutes is it going to be?
And, he says, we're still doing the clips.
He was very polite.
Oh, he
said, just a couple more minutes. I said, okay. And I understood why. They were afraid in the process they might bump something that's going to go down through the rails and fall onto a car that's passing underneath, so they didn't want to have any cars passing underneath.
Good. No, I get it. They're being careful. I get all that. I don't necessarily fault our workers on this sort of situation, but there's a disconnect, a horrible disconnect between government and, I don't know, and construction projects. Biden, remember him, Biden? He commits $7 billion or so for charging stations for electric cars, and 4 years later, they've built six or eight charging stations throughout. I mean, throughout the country. That's the total number after 4 years, and $7 billion invested, quote unquote. Other countries seem to be able to do this kind of stuff. We can't. There's something about the federal government. It's just paralyzed, and part of it is its own doing. They have all these rules that, first of all, you have to have absolutely 100% union work, and then you'd also have tremendous amounts of requirements about who you hire, and it has to be a minority or female-owned business and that kind of thing. So everything takes forever and ever and ever, years go by, and the money is either not spent or it's just frittered away. So as a result, our Acela high-speed rail line continues to poke along at 40 miles an hour, despite billions of dollars in track upgrades.
I believe it can do about 70, actually.
Now, 70? But, oh, yeah, well, it sure wasn't when I saw it.
When it's near the the stations, it slows down.
I believe Tony B was lingering outside the door, perhaps with some maybe it's breaking news. I wonder if Tony B has breaking news. Well, we'll find out again.
That's true. We'll find out. We have a break at the bottom of the hour, and we'll learn all kinds of stuff at that time.
Is that right? Okay, fine.
I believe so.
All right. Well, you're right about the break at the top bottom of the hour. Yes, Tony B. Tony B, do you wish to butt in on the show as is your wont?
Yes, I want everyone to look forward to Valentine's Day next month and be around the idea of love.
Okay, look at that. I asked for breaking news, and I got it, by golly. Look at Tony B. spreading happiness and light wherever he goes, the exact opposite of Gideon Fountain. Isn't that amazing? The polar opposite. Me and my kvetching and complaining. All right, so I'm predicting that Ellen Mosier, although she's keeping mum on the subject, I think she'll have a quick and immediate deal at 7 Jones Park Drive, Riverside, Connecticut, at she's a good pricer, I'll tell you, $5,995,000. It doesn't have a pool. I think the Harmons did have a pool, interestingly enough. But it does have just a really, really nice functional design. There's just something nice about it. There's a really nice guest suite. Like if you had an elderly in-law, there's a perfect guest room, huge closet for it, nice bath, down the hall from the kitchen, separated enough from the house that you're away from the noise and that kind of thing. But I just really admire the way the architect figured that one out. And plus everything else, all the rooms, everything flows nicely. I know that's a nebulous word, but it does. It just seems to, things are where you expect them to be.
I like that, yes.
Yep.
What I don't like are these small houses. I was just thinking about this the other day. They're narrow. They're so narrow. It's like I can't stand the sense of lack of space from that standpoint. Could they come up with just a different shape, more square?
Where do you see such things?
Oh, generally on YouTube.
Yeah, we're not building those in Greenwich.
No.
Heaven forfend, if that's the phrase I want. So, yeah, no, I sort of know what you mean, but I'll have to look it up.
Okay.
Because Bob Small, everybody, as we all know, has a wild imagination, makes things up.
And a very, very small budget, yes.
Yeah, well, that's true, too. That's why you're looking at the little guys. Yeah, I get it. All right. So the only houses that are lingering are typically the overpriced ones or ones with some kind of fundamental flaw. Or there are such things. I mean, and by the way, those houses that linger turn out to be often very, very good bargains. Yes, they're there for a reason. They're, you know, maybe there's road noise that people object to, or maybe there's one guy that builds, every house that he builds is all marble and granite, and it's just, they tend to be sort of, I won't say mausoleum-like, but they're, you know, they're a little on the chilly side, figuratively speaking. So those things can be a problem. Either way, sometimes some very, very well-built, expensive houses sit lingering on the Greenwich market and become bargains because, you know, the seller in this town will put $4, $5, $6 million into building a house that doesn't include the land value and then sell it to you for $4 million or sell it for $5 million, whatever. Even if they sold it for $6 million, they've still lost a bundle of money, right? I mean, they've put all that money into it, and they have to pay all the, you know, the broker fees and all that sort of thing. And next thing you know, they're in the hole. By the way, there was a bizarre, massive increase in property taxes on some luxury properties in town. I wonder how they justify that. We will discuss that and some other things when we come right back.
Good morning. Today will be partly sunny with the wind advisory until tonight. Some rain showers possible around midday, then some late afternoon snow showers possible in the upper 40s. Will be windy, then partly cloudy for tonight in the teens with wind chills 5 to 10 and sunshine for tomorrow. Will be in the mid-30s, wind chills in the single digits, then increasing clouds for tomorrow night in the upper 20s, rising to the low 30s. Stop into UK Gourmet at 78 Stony Hill Road in Bethel or online at ukg.life. You'll bring home the most charming tastes of Britain, like the refreshing and delicious Belvoir mocktails. I'm meteorologist Chris Rush on 1490 WGCH and WGCH.com anywhere.
When you hear the term living better, what do you think about? More money, a bigger house, maybe a yacht? What about how you feel physically? How do you wake up each day? How do you sleep during the night? What activities you can and cannot do? When you feel good, life is good. So if pain is affecting your life, see how Relief Factor can help. Relief Factor is a daily supplement that fights pain naturally, developed by doctors. It doesn't just mask pain temporarily. It helps reduce or even eliminate pain. How do I know? I absolutely am a customer. I take Relief Factor daily. No lower back pain for me anymore. In fact, the longer you take it, the more effective it is. Give their three-week quick start a try. It's only $19.95, less than a dollar a day. Just one phone call, 800-4-RELIEF, 800-4-RELIEF. Relief Factor, relief wherever you're hurting. In 3 weeks or even days, Relief Factor can give you a chance to rediscover the true meaning of living better again. Visit ReliefFactor.com or call 800-4-RELIEF. That's 800-4-RELIEF for the one and only Relief Factor.
This is Travis Milliman of Greenwich Library. Do you have questions about how to better your child's education? Join us on Wednesday, February 5th from 5 to 8 p.m. for special education IEP reviews with Nick Coletti. Coletti has 2 decades of experience working in special education and is offering free 30-minute sessions to help parents obtain clarity on their child's IEP. Sessions will take place in community room number 1. Registration is encouraged, but walk-ins are welcome and will be helped on a first-come, first-served basis. Please visit www.greenwichlibrary.org for more information or call 203-622-7900 to talk to one of our librarians. We hope to see you soon at the library. Once again, this is Travis Milliman from Greenwich Library on 1490 WGCH and WGCH.com anywhere.
WGCH is proud to present Greenwich High School Winter Sports. This is Rob Adams. Join me for live play-by-play coverage of boys and girls hockey and basketball through the regular season and the playoffs. So catch the Cardinals as they hit the court and the ice. The next game is Saturday night at 8 for boys ice hockey as the Cardinals travel to Ridgefield. The pregame show starts at 7:50. It's live winter sports action from your sports leader, 1490 WGCH.
What a day this has been, what a rare mood I'm in. Why, it's almost like being in love. There's a smile on my face for the whole human race. Why, it's almost like being in love. All the music of life seems to be like a bell that is ringing for me.
So, the great, the amazing, the incomparable, the irreplaceable Nat King Cole, everybody. I was listening to Frank Sinatra's version of this, and I thought to myself, wait, let me turn off the microphone on my, let me look at you. Bob Small claims that song comes from the Broadway musical Brigadoon.
Yeah, they were showing it on the video as I was watching.
They were?
Playing. Yeah,
oh,
yeah.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
The music popped up and right in the title there.
Song was first sung by David Brooks and Marion Bell in the Broadway production of Brigadoon. Wow. Yeah. And later performed in the 1954 film version by Gene Kelly. Well, I'll be darned.
They certainly wouldn't have left it out of the film version.
No, yeah. That's a great... Yeah. Oh, now, sister and listener Lauren in Los Angeles says weather... What'd she say? Weather is regarding WGCH.
Oh.
She says for her, the weather... Where did it go? I lost it. Any second now. Weather, news, and traffic buttons work. Oh, I guess our live button's not working.
That's an individual issue with...
Somebody's iPhone?
Yeah,
let me see.
Whatever they're using. Unfortunately, my own phone does the same thing. So, and I've yet,
yeah, mine's working.
Yeah, I yet to figure out why it's doing that. I got to work on that.
Yeah.
But I don't often need to listen to it that way, so...
I get it.
Yeah.
So I was listening to Frank Sinatra, and you know, there's no greater fan. Well, maybe there's a greater fan, but anyway, I'm a huge fan of Frank Sinatra, and I was listening to his version of Almost Like Being in Love, and I thought, that's good, but not quite up to Nat King Cole, and sure enough, you've just played that and reminded me again. There's sometimes a song is just done definitively. It's never going to be done any better, and that's a good example.
Nobody's going to top Nat King Cole on Almost Like Being in Love. Gideon, you could sing it. No, no, don't ask me. I really can't. What a day. Oh, Gideon, please don't. All right, so never mind trying to top Nat King Cole. Although people have said, no one's ever said it. But so where were we? Oh, yeah, so the town has massively increased taxes on houses. And I don't think they're justified. And naturally, the owners of these homes, you know, they're usually the mega wealthy. But there's as much as 50% increase. There's a house in the Indian Harbor section that went from $56,000 a year, yearly taxes, to $115,000 a year. That's more than double. I mean, that's just craziness, absolute insanity. It's not, and then they also have it valued much higher than it's actually worth. And another one on Cedar Cliff went from $66,000 to 90-something thousand. So, you know, a 50% increase? Yeah, 50%. But 50 to 100% increases in taxes for a property in Greenwich is not fair. Either they're admitting they totally screwed up before, or they're getting a little money hungry. Now, even with those prices those amounts that I just told you, that still makes Greenwich very, very cheap. If you have a house for $10 million in Rye, New York, your taxes will be well past $200,000. Mm. So Greenwich is nowhere near that. But still, you shouldn't. Taxes should not double or more in 1 year. That's just unjustified. And it's not like, I mean, you know, I was going to say they're not exactly spending the money wisely. Robin Place is another one. I was predicting some of these, it's so tough. You think it's easy being a real estate agent? It's not. Oh, sure. I mean, it's all fun and games, but it can be tough when you're trying to figure out what things are worth and the buyers keep confounding your predictions. So as I said, I think last week I discussed this one on Hendry Avenue, right across from Riverside School, which I went to, and you know, it's an 11-acre campus, really nice-looking elementary school. That and Julian Curtis are the two best-looking elementary schools in the town of Greenwich. They both have this vast swath of property, as I say. I know Riverside School, pretty sure, is 11 acres. Maybe it's 9, whatever. It's a lot of land, and it sits beautifully around this 1920s brick building, which some people, when they drive up, think is some sort of a university. It looks has that look. And here it is, a humble elementary school. Anyway, Hendry Avenue comes on the market, $4.1 million or so, right across the street from the school. And I went through it, and, you know, I thought, oh, okay, you know, it's nice, it's updated. You know, it's kind of, they shoehorned in, and I do mean shoehorned in, a pool in this small backyard, high fence, neighbors peering down at you. You know, it had some drawbacks. But I still, as I was leaving, I turned to the broker and I said, quick sale here, quick sale. And then when I drove out and went home, I was thinking about it a lot, because this is what you do if you're a broker. You're thinking about, what are things worth? What's it worth? Who have I got for it? And that's why we have broker open houses. No, is that why I get it? Yes, yes. So I suddenly get it into my head that, no, it's gross. What are you talking about, quick sale? That's so overpriced. That should be in the high $2 million. Yeah, yeah, $2 million, $2.8, $2.9. Not a penny more. I mean, maybe you go to $3 million. This is how I talked myself out of thinking that it was going to be a quick sale. So I don't say anything to the listing agent, obviously. You don't say, hey, by the way, did you know you grossly overpriced your house? And my last words to her were, quick sale. So I checked with her 24 hours later. I said, how's it going? She goes, multiple offers. So I was glad I didn't open my big yap, but damn it. What? I mean, this is just, and I talked a whole bunch. I'm talking half a dozen.
Well, this is what happens when there's so little
inventory. Exactly, right? Bob Small. Yeah, I know. Why can't I figure that out? I should know that. I'm in the thick of it. But I talked to about 5 or 6 other brokers who all had exactly the same reaction. They all, in fact, without my, they didn't, they passed right through my supposition that it was well-priced. They immediately all thought it was overpriced. Mm. And then to learn that it's multiple offers and might even go more higher than that, everybody, all the brokers, all the busy brokers, have to reset. They have to recalibrate,
yeah,
to adjust for this. If they say, okay, that fairly humble, you know, some nice, somewhat nicely updated, but not expensively updated house is worth $4+ million, then therefore, you know, this one over here has to be worth $6 million, and this one over here is also worth $4 million.
Its location is wonderful.
Seemingly, although that was another thing. Some people said, and some buyers I heard, some brokers showed it, and the buyer said, I don't want to be right across the street from a noisy elementary school playground. I mean, I don't know.
And a block away from the central middle school. Central? Is that Eastern?
Eastern.
Eastern.
Eastern Junior High, yeah.
Yeah.
Let's go back to calling junior high. Right, right. Central Middle, or Eastern Middle School. I hate when they rename something that doesn't need renaming. But anyway, this, yeah, it's about possibly as much as 1,000 feet from Eastern Junior High School and about 200 feet from the front door or the side door of Riverside Elementary School. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's a perfect location. And having all that yard out there in front of you is great for, you know, you can, as long as you pick up after him, you can walk your dog in there and you can just jog around it. It's just, there's nothing wrong with having a playing field in the immediate proximity of your house. Notice I don't say close proximity because you don't need to. Proximity means close. It means right next to. Stop saying close proximity. Getting, you've already hashed out on that. Yeah, I know, I know. All right, so wait, more text messages. Wait a minute. Now she's, okay, wait. Yeah. Sister, listener in Los Angeles, Lauren, as she's known, can listen to the show today on her laptop but not on her phone. But as you say, it's a phone issue with individual phones.
I agree. It is, yeah.
I can't explain it. I don't know. Weird. Anyway, so it's tough. It's tough being a broker. I'm not crying. I'm just saying it's tough being a broker sometimes with the prices changing right under your feet. And I can only imagine the threat or the thrill that appraisers are having. Because they, you know, appraisers used to love to come in and say, no, this is overpriced. And therefore, I don't approve. You know, if you're making a deal at $3 million and the appraiser comes and says, no, I've looked at all the comparables. It's worth $2.8 million. So then everybody has to rush around and the buyer has to come up with more money. The bank gets all excited. That doesn't happen anymore. These days, appraisers, I have a feeling, are just going, yeah, okay, that's fine. Whatever you say. Six million? Oh, it was $5 million last year. Okay, six, fine. We'll do it. It's tough, people. It's tough. All right, what else happened this week? I'm still in shock about a house in Old Greenwich going for $2,055,000 over the asking price. I think it was $2,055,000.
Wow, over the asking.
Over the ask. That's wow. I think that's a record in the town of Greenwich, and it was an antique house on a pretty nice lot. You know, 0.7 acres, perhaps maybe it was 0.49, whatever it was. It was a slightly oversized lot and a 15-foot wide path to the water. You couldn't see the water, but it was a nice wide path to the water, and at the end a cement pier and a gazebo and high and nicely perched up on the water. And this was real water. Unlike me, I get to look at eelgrass at low tide. This thing just had, you know, regular sand. It ran down to, you know, low water at low tide, but there was sand. It was, and then, you know, a very nice choice bit of waterfront that you walked down to. In fact, speaking of bidding wars, Joe DeJesus went something like $730,000 over the asking price to buy a house next door to this one, to tear it down, to build new.
Wow.
Steve Arcino, ace broker from Sotheby's, priced this little tear down at $2,995. I mean, 1,300 square feet. It was a tiny little house. And Arcino prices it at $2,995, which seemed to everybody quite reasonable. But builder Joe DeJesus said, no, you've underpriced it. And he wasn't the only one, but he had, in order to get it, he had to go 700 plus over the asking price. And I thought that was a lot. But now we see $2,055,000. Let me see if I got the math right on that. Because this place on Shore Road, I think it was 56, Houlihan broker Amanda Miller, always a good pricer, typically a good pricer, had it on for $3,495. But it sold for $5,550,000. So that means minus $3,495, $2,055,000 over the asking price. And there were other bids, you know, right on down the line. It wasn't like they went, one person was $100,000 over the ask, and then this crazy couple went $2,055,000. They were pushed that way by other
anxious
bidders.
It sounds like
that
$55,000 was because if somebody was at two.
Exactly. Somebody was going $2 million over, or maybe the broker speculated to the buyer. They said, she probably said, look, you know, you're willing to go $2 million over, but if you're going to do that, let's cement it. Let's make sure we're safe. Let's go add another little measure of bucks. Mm. So they went $55,000 over that amount. $2,055,000 over what was a reasonable asking price. This wasn't a deliberately underpriced property, let me tell you. So it's amazing. By the way, it then turns out the winning bid was a adjacent owner.
Oh.
How do you like that? And the same thing happened on Don Harbor. On Don Harbor, a house sold, came on for, I think, $4 million or just below $4 million, and it was, you know, nice enough, kind of a ranch, spread out ranch style colonial, and everybody thought, okay, it's a tear down, it's a land sale, and you know, it's probably priced right. Certainly, it'll sell within $300,000 or $400,000 of that. But instead, it goes over the asking price, and that was in turn bought by an adjacent owner, lived behind it, wanted to have a guest quarters. $4 million guest quarters, which sounds like an incredible, luxurious, and frivolous way to throw your money around. But again, if you're buying a lot, a nice, flat, almost 1 acre lot with beautiful old trees pushed off on the sides on Don Harbor, one of the top addresses in Riverside, is that such a frivolous expense? No, you're getting a guest house for a while, and then, you know, 10 years down the road, maybe you sell it again at a nice profit. It certainly isn't going to drop in value, at least not in the foreseeable future, whatever that means. I never know what foreseeable. What future is foreseeable? I don't know.
Well, that's an interesting point. Greenwich real estate has a fairly, lately it's been a fairly long foreseeable future. It's been doing it like this for a few years now.
The big change in my career, and I've done this for 30 plus years, as you know, I came in and the market immediately crashed. I remember that was the mid-80s, and it was a very, very busy market. And then suddenly, boom, we had some sort of a dip in the 1990. Something Bill Clinton did, I forget what. Something, I think his Justice Department announced they were breaking up Microsoft or something. And there was this, or maybe that was the dot-com crash. Yeah, that was the dot-com crash. I forget what happened in the 90s. Oh, I think that was, I know what it was. The Democrats had declared that Ronald Reagan's administration had ushered in a decade of greed. That's the way the New York Times and all the Democrat media was covering it, the decade of greed.
So then they turned around and said, we can be more greedy. We'll show you.
Yeah, they did. And they created this huge structure of taxes, new taxes on everything to get those rich people. It was all designed luxury taxes on jewelry and art and boats. They put the boating industry out of business for a year or two. They absolutely killed the boating industry, which they realized way too late, but finally rescinded, and the boats came back. They never did dismiss the gas guzzler tax. That remains with us today, but that was aimed at luxury cars. What else did they do? Anyway, the luxury taxes, I think they also disallowed the writing off of passive losses on real estate. And that decimated in the 1990 time period, it decimated the condo business, because a lot of condos were being built with the expectation of a tax break for investors. And suddenly that tax break was just ripped away, just pulled rug right out from under them. And so a whole bunch of savings and loans, if you remember that crisis, all of those went out of business because they were all basing it on real estate investing, and the real estate suddenly plummeted in value. It was a classic government-caused economic catastrophe. They always are. Every catastrophe in the economy is caused by government bungling. There's a whole book on the subject. So that's what I lived through when I got into the business, and then there have been subsequent drops, subsequent crashes. You know, the dot-com was one completely silly and stupid. The 1987 stock market crash was idiotic and stupid. When you look in retrospect, you see the little dip that it was. They treated it like it was the end of the world. John Kenneth Galbraith, cover story, New York Times. Well, this just goes to show, he basically was saying, I predicted this all along. You know, he's an old non-regretting, unapologetic socialist is what he was. All John right. Kenneth Galbraith. Oh, the great and revered economist. What a clown. So anyway, Gideon, you shouldn't speak ill of the dead. Yes, that's quite so. The crashes have all occurred when the government gets involved and decides to punish rich people. So let's hope we don't go through that again. In the meantime, COVID, which seems, yes, also government cause, as it turns out, probably the Chinese government, according to the CIA, who we can now believe, apparently, the COVID changed the real estate's reputation was so tarnished from the Bernie Madoff 2009 crash triggered by, I don't even remember now what triggered the 2008-2009 crash. It was,
Was that the easy loaning?
Yeah, I guess that was it. Yes, of course. Yeah, again, government cause. They forced banks to relax and even eliminate lending standards. So we had this big crash, and real estate's reputation was severely and seemingly permanently damaged. So we had just this drifting period of no. First, 2010, 2011, 12, the real estate dropped in value in Greenwich and throughout the country. Then it kind of stabilized. But then it just drifted and drifted, and especially Greenwich's back country. Nobody wanted it. You paid $6 million for that place? I'll give you $3 million. That was a typical trade in those days, and like, say, 2015, 2016. You'd put a house on the market, and you'd talk to the buyer, and you'd say, okay, I mean the seller, say, here's our marketing plan. We're going to, you know, we're gonna do this. In the first 6 months, we'll have your advertise. We'll put you on this internet site. We'll be in this magazine. Maybe we can get an interview on the Gideon Fountain Real Estate Show. Who knows? You know, all these plans you had to make because the house was going to be on the market for a long time. Now, I don't think Debbie Needle even got around to printing the listings on this $5.5 million downtown condo. It's just, the change is so dramatic. It's craziness. You can't, printing brochures, printed brochures. I mean, those days are so long gone. And all of that started not immediately when COVID hit.
And it costs less now to do that.
Yes, it does. Absolutely. Unfortunately, real estate companies are still not making as much money because there's just so few things selling. You know, typical real estate company has a split of at least the best they get is maybe, well, sometimes they get 40%. But typically, if the broker is any good, they're enticing them to join the firm by paying them an 80% split, sometimes even a 90% split. So the firm has got to sell a lot of real estate to make any money. The broker does well. The real estate agent does well. But the company has to sell a lot of real estate. So the quantity is not there at the moment. Anyway, talking about, just things are selling so quickly, and Debbie Needle, among others, not having a chance to even print up a brochure. So that's the change, and it was, it all began, COVID was, I still think I was patient zero for COVID with, I got it March 20th, but maybe there's somebody in February that had it in Greenwich, but March 20th, I got it, lasted about one day, and I was done with it. A miserable one day, I'll admit, but still. So March, April, all of a sudden, the New Yorkers are wanting to get the hell out of New York City. Just get out of this crowded city where people are breathing on me and they can't go to the gym. Everything's closed. They just want to get out. So the rental market explodes. All of a sudden, everybody wants to rent. Mm-hmm. And that lasted about, 30, 60 days. And then the sale market started to reflect this new enthusiasm, and suddenly everybody wanted back country. They wanted 4 acres. There were 4 or 10 acres, 12 acres, a pool, a guest house, if they had the money for it. And plus, the prices were really good. They didn't really fully appreciate how good they were, but they still hadn't risen to extreme levels. So people were buying houses that had been sitting on the market for 4 years or more, and sitting on the market with, and suddenly a little bidding war would erupt. Nothing like we're getting today, but you know, the house you paid $6 million for, and your broker is saying, "Well, if we get 3, you probably should take it." And suddenly, you're getting $4 million for it, and you say, "Okay, well, I lost money, but damn it, a nice recoup there. At least we went up $1 million."
Nobody thought it would go on and on and on. We're now in the fifth year of the COVID market, and with no sign of stoppage and nothing to relieve it, nothing. There's no sign of inventory. We were complaining about that at our office meeting yesterday. We need, you know, you need listings, and I think we have 17 listings over at Houlihan at the moment, which, you know, they're out of a total of, as I say, out of, there's supposedly 81 in town. Some of those are probably have deals, but are not reporting. But, you know, not to keep mentioning her name, but Debbie Needle brings something on, but it's gone so fast it doesn't even record as a listing. It's just boom, gone. It's gone. Sorry. So
I'm not sure I want to see
inventory.
More.
I know,
because that means way more people here.
Yeah,
and
I know.
It's all kind of crowded now.
It's very crowded now. I know. The answer is not to build more housing, which the aptly named Representative Looney up in Hartford. He's the head of the. Isn't he the top politician up there in Hartford? I think he is. His name is Looney. And his cousin Wacky is no better.
Oh dear,
Jeremy Wacky, I think is the guy's name. It's weird. The whole family has names relating to mental health. So Looney wants more housing in Greenwich. You know, I mean, in Connecticut, but certainly in Greenwich. And then he's also in favor of, as Governor Lamont reiterated a couple of days ago, the more immigrants, the better. We want more immigration. And he means illegal immigration, where they're welcome in Connecticut. And meanwhile, we spent over $1 billion. Of taxpayer funds supporting our illegal population. Over $1 billion for added additional costs for medical care, schools, food, transportation, everything that goes with that. I mean, it's just insanity. And then I hear people say, oh, no, it's a net gain for the economy. No, it's not. It's not a net gain. You can't throw $1 billion and more coming every day. It's so silly. I don't know. Anyway, so no, Bob, more housing in Greenwich will not solve the problem. We just need sellers who want to go away. But I don't know. We don't have them. They're not. Everybody wants to stay. It's a nice town to live in.
Where do you go up from here, though? I think that's...
You don't go up. You leave town is what you do. But as one broker in the office pointed out, I think it was Barbara Wells, she said, there's a lot of would-be buyers out there. There's people that, who have an... $4 million house, and they just want a scaled-down house. They want something for about two.
Oh.
And they can't find it.
So they don't want to really go up. They'd rather go slightly down.
Possibly, yeah. Yeah. The best population or demographic for adding inventory would be the scaled-downers. They're good for brokers because they sell and then they go buy something, but they have nothing to buy. That's the trouble. Anyway, I don't know how to solve it. I think adding thousands of housing units to Greenwich would not be a good solution. How about that? All right, you guys, thanks for suffering through yet another show, another exciting episode of Your Greenwich House. Temperature today right now in Greenwich is 49 degrees. It feels like 75. It's such a break from the 2 weeks of below freezing that we had. Climate change, my friends. All right, so never mind all that. I'll see you next week. Thanks for listening.
This is your community radio station serving Lower Fairfield County and Westchester. 1490 WGCH in Greenwich.
President Trump's nominee for health secretary is on the Capitol Hill hot seat this hour.
Ours has always been a family that has been involved in public service. And I look forward to continuing that tradition.
Robert F. Kennedy Jr. before the Senate Finance Committee being questioned on a range of issues, including allegations that he is anti-vaccine, something Kennedy insists he is not. His views on abortion have also drawn fire from some in pro-life circles. Today, the first of 2 days of hearings for Kennedy. Tomorrow, he goes before a different Senate panel. The Biden White House didn't really seem to know what was going on, but from the Trump White House, we're getting some answers about the swarm of drones spotted repeatedly late last year.
The drones that were flying over New Jersey in large numbers were authorized to be flown by the FAA for research and various other reasons.
What kind of research? What other reasons? We don't know, but quoting Trump Press Secretary Caroline Leavitt, this was not the enemy. Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu has been invited to the White House next week.
The visit comes as the United States is pressuring Israel.